I thought it might be nice if I traced for you the history of these people, not in very much detail, of course, for that would take a long time, but just to give you an idea of who these Jews are, who these Israelites are, and why they're so intent on retaining the land that God has given to them. So shall we just read a few scriptures, first of all in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation. And I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse them that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Verse 10. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. Verse 13. So I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. And it came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was very fair, and so on. Now, Romans chapter 9. Romans chapter 9, verse 4. Who are Israelites? To whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises? They're very privileged people, aren't they? Whose are the fathers, and of whom, as concerning the flesh, Christ came, who is over all, God blessed for ever. Now chapter 11, verse 25, for I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits, that blindness in part is happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. There are many other scriptures that we could read, of course. Ur of the Chaldees was a great city, great in politics, great in religion, and great in commerce. And in this great city there lived a man called Abram, who had an amazing experience. The God of glory appeared unto him. Acts chapter 7 and verse 2. What an amazing experience that was. The God of glory appeared unto him and said unto him, get thee out of thy kindred and from the out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And Abram obeyed, and stepping out in faith, faith is described as stepping out onto something when there's nothing to stand on, nothing but the promises of God. And that's what Abram did. And he stepped out in faith. He went out, not knowing whither he went. He looked for a city that hath foundations, whose builder and maker was God. In the eyes of the world, of course, this was a step of the utmost folly. To step out, to leave your country, your kindred, your home, to step away, to leave the place there where you've been brought up in, to go to a place that you've never heard of, not knowing where you're going at all, in the eyes of the world, it's a step of the utmost folly. But Abram had got a vision of the eternal and the invisible God, and this vision altered the whole of his life. And its effects can be seen in the world today. Imagine that. Its effects can be seen in the world today. No nation in this world is able to trace its origin to one man save the Jewish nation. Abram came to Haran, and he remained there until Terah, his father, died. And at this time it would seem that God called him a second time. And here the promise was made by God that he would make of him a great nation and bless him. So he left Haran and came into Canaan. He pitched his tent between Hai and Bethel, where he built an altar unto the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And apart from a short stay in Egypt, he remained in Canaan as an alien, as a pilgrim, and as a stranger. And in that context, he's a type of the believer's position in the world today. For we're passing through this world as pilgrims and strangers, as Peter called us. God changed his name to Abram, Abraham, when he was 99 years old. Genesis chapter 17. And when he was 100 years old, a miracle took place in the lives of both he and his wife. What was that miracle? At 100 years old, a son was born unto them. The son's name was Isaac, the son of promise. So Isaac became the next link, the second link, in this miraculous chain of events concerning these people, the Jews. Abraham died at the age of 175 years, Genesis chapter 25, verse 7. But not before his son married Rebekah. To Isaac, in answer to his prayer, another miracle happened. And what was that? Rebekah had two sons, Esau and Jacob. We skip over the early part of Jacob's life, where we find him scheming and working for his own ends, until at last God deals with him. You remember that Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled with him until the breaking of the day a man. And God said unto Jacob, arise and go to Bethel and dwell there. So Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. And his name was changed to Israel. And unto him were born 12 sons. We call them the patriarchs. Reuben, Simon, Levi, Judah, Zebulun, Issachar, Dan, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Joseph, and Benjamin. I wonder how many of us could recite those off. The 12 tribes of Israel. The next chain in this miraculous event is Joseph. And we're introduced to him as Israel's second youngest son. He was to play a large part in the plan and purpose of God. At the age of 17, Joseph had two dreams, you remember. In the first, his brother Sheaves rose up and made obeisance to his. In the second, believe it or not, the sun, moon and stars made obeisance to him. This seems strange, doesn't it? But it was in the plan and the purpose of God. Joseph was sold into Egypt, you'll remember, as a slave by his envious brothers, where for 13 years he knew what bitter bondage meant. He was flung into prison and was given a raw deal, you remember, by the butler whose dreams he was able to interpret. I won't go into that story because you all know it so well. But the last thing that Joseph said to the butler was, "When you're restored to your place, don't forget me." But alas, alas, the butler forgot all about him. The butler forgot him. And in the plan and purpose of God, Pharaoh the king dreams, and Joseph is called from prison to interpret his dreams. There was to be 7 years of plenty, you'll remember, and 7 years of famine, which with the help of God, Joseph was able to tell Pharaoh all about it. And Pharaoh elevated him to the highest position in the land. He became the food controller of the whole land, a position second only to Pharaoh himself. The good years came, the 7 years of plenty, and they went. And the 7 bad years, you remember, began as Joseph had said they would. He's reconciled to his brothers, and eventually, you'll remember, to his aged father. And by the goodness of Pharaoh, the whole family left Canaan and dwelt in Goshen, where they prospered and grew. Israel died in Egypt at the age of 147 years. And Joseph buried him in the cave of Machpelah in Canaan. So Joseph died too, at the age of 110 years. And his brethren, and all that generation, and the children, and all that generation, full stop. And the children of Israel multiplied and grew and waxed exceeding mighty. Then there arose a king that knew not Joseph, and afraid lest these people would ultimately grow so strong as to destroy them, he set over them taskmasters who made their lives bitter with hard bondage. And they were led to cry to God in their distress and in their need. And just as God raised up Joseph to bring the children of Israel into Egypt, so he raises up a man to take them out of Egypt back to the promised land. God always has his man, you know. We've often heard Dr. Billy Graham referred to as God's man for this age and generation in which we live. And perhaps he was and is. But God always has his man. And so he raises up this man, and Moses comes on the scene. His miraculous preservation in the Ark of Bulrushes, his education and upbringing in the king's palace is a story that is well known, and it doesn't need me to repeat it right here. Then comes the plagues, culminating in the destruction of the firstborn in the land, not sheltered by the blood of the Lamb. I hope I'm making this clear. Are you following it? The redemption of the children of Israel and their deliverance from the hand of their enemy across the Red Sea is the next link in the divine chain. And coming, leaving the Dead Sea and coming to the borders of the Promised Land, I spoke about this last year, I think it was, when I spoke about Caleb, you know, and they came to the borders of the land and they sent into the land the 12 spies, and 10 of them came back with a bad report, and 2 of them came back with a very good report, namely Joshua and Caleb. And You remember I said that they held a meeting? You know, and meetings don't always bring anything out that's good. They held a meeting and they decided that the majority would rule. They listened to the 10 that had the bad report. They forgot the report that the 2 had, the good report. And so, God, they turned back. They didn't go into the land. And then they turned their backs on the land, and for 40 years, they wandered in the wilderness. And in the wilderness, the tabernacle was set up. God dwelt there amongst his people. He led them by a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. For 40 years, they were sustained in the wilderness by God, so that they lacked nothing. Their clothes waxed not old, and their feet swelled not. Nehemiah chapter 9. The manna came every morning as God said it would. The water from the rock came when they most needed it. And God delivered them during those 40 years from the hands of their enemies. And then after 40 long years of wandering, they entered the promised land. Moses, because of something that he did at the second rock that they came to, he didn't enter it. He saw it from Mount Nebo. And he died there. And he was buried, who by? He was buried by God, it says, and God buried him. And that happened before they entered Canaan. Who became their new leader after that? Well, it was Joshua, the son of Nun. He became the new leader. He was one of the 2 that brought the good report back after spying out the land. Notice here that God chose the people. He chose Israel. Why he chose them, we do not know. But it was because he loved them. I think it's Deuteronomy chapter 7 says that it was because I loved them. And you and I often wonder why God chose us. I do at any rate. I often wonder why God brought me as a boy of 17 under the sound of the gospel for the first time. I often wonder why he loved me. Well, I've only got one answer to that. And it was because he loved me. Because he loved me. And he chose those people because he loved them. And he chose the land in which they were to dwell. And that land is there today. And it will never, never be taken from Israel. Never. Never. They can argue politically and all, you know, and all that goes on over there, but Israel will never, never release that land to anybody else. God chose that people. God chose that land. And in coming days, they shall dwell there with Christ their King over them. They had to fight for their possessions, of course. But they failed to clear out all the inhabitants of the land. but here, their history began as a settled nation. And many battles were fought. In some they were defeated, and in some they were victorious. Now, after the death of Joshua, Israel came under the government of judges, some 15 in number: Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Barak, Gideon, Abimelech, Toja, Jair, Jephthah, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon, Samson, Eli, and Samson. And that covered a period of about 230 years. And at the end of the book of Judges, we read this sad lament. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Sad lament, is it? Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And I sometimes think that that's what's happening today. We're all doing what's right in our own eyes. And this book began, the book of the book of Judges. It began with failure, and it ended with failure. Then Israel said, well, we want a king. We want to be like the nations around us. We want to be like the nations around us. We want to keep up with the Joneses. And they would have a king. Give us a king to judge us, they said. And God gave them their desire. So Saul, you'll remember, was anointed king. He was followed by David, Solomon, and Rehoboam, all of which reigned over the whole of the tribe of Israel. But in the reign of Rehoboam, a revolt took place. And the kingdom was split into two. 10 tribes forming the kingdom of Israel, and 2 tribes forming the kingdom of Judah, the tribe of Judah and Benjamin. And from then until the captivity, we have the history of the two kingdoms. 23 kings reigned over Judah. 19 kings reigned over Israel. Some of these kings were good, and some of them were bad. Some did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord, and some did that which was evil. By and large, however, the people departed from God and would have none of his ways. And prophet after prophet was sent to warn them of approaching judgment if they continued in their departure from God. Jeremiah was commissioned to convey the last dread message. This whole land, he said, shall be a desolation and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. But they heeded not, and at last, about 606 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, took Jerusalem and carried away Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. 11 years after, he returned and laid waste the city and took Zedekiah and the rest of the people to Babylon. 100 years before that, in about 740 BC, in the reign of Hoshea, Shalmaneser came with his hordes from Assyria and took the 10 tribes of Israel captive. And they've been lost ever since. Nobody knows where they are. Somebody says that Britain is one of those 10 tribes. Well, I don't really believe that. But these 10 tribes have been lost ever since. A remnant of Judah returned to Jerusalem, you'll remember, under Ezra and Nehemiah, after 70 years captivity in Babylon. But Judah's pre-glory and strength was never recovered. At last, in AD 70, the Roman general Titus destroyed the city of Jerusalem, as the Lord had said, and the Jews were finally dispersed among the nations, where they are until this day. And every country in the world has a Jew in it. Every country in the world has a Jew in it. And Hitler, of course, destroyed 6 million of them. And he thought by destroying 6 million of them that that would be the end of them. But as it was in the days of Egypt, when the Jews multiplied and increased, so since Hitler's day, they've been multiplying and increasing. And Hitler had no hope whatever of ever winning that war, no hope whatever, because he was against the Lord's people, and he destroyed them, and the Lord was on his people's side. Hosea's prophecy has been fulfilled now. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, without a prince, and without a sacrifice, and without an image, and without an ephod, and without a seraphim. And the remaining part of this prophecy is being and will be fulfilled. Afterwards shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God. And that will verily come to pass when the Lord appears as a mighty King. They shall look on him whom they pierced, and they shall acknowledge him as their Messiah. And so throughout this generation, the nation of Israel is hid, a treasure hid in the field. They're blind. Blindness in part has happened to Israel. They've been broken off. If some of the branches be broken off, Romans 11 says, they're without their national center. Jerusalem shall be trodden down, and they shall be scattered. Today, Judah is returning to the land, but they're returning there in unbelief. They tell me the great majority of the Jews that are returning to the land are atheists. They neither believe in the Lord Jesus as their Messiah, but they don't even believe in God. But they're returning to the land as God said they would. And blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles comes in. God has rejected them as a nation and dealt with them as individuals, just as he deals with you and I. And the Bible says that all Israel shall be saved. Not every Israelite shall be saved, but as a nation, they will be saved. Their future is clearly defined. The pendulum of time will swing again for them after the rapture, when they shall be called upon to pass through the great tribulation. And at the end of this period, Christ will appear and deliver them out of the hand of their enemies, and they shall look on him whom they pierced. And their Messiah shall reign over them in perfect rule for 1,000 years. Well, that's their history up until the coming of the Lord. You remember that from Malachi, there's a period of about 400 years, I think it is, where the heavens are silent, when there's no word from God, no message from God at all. And then the Lord Jesus appears. But John says, when he came unto his own, and his own received him not. And that's how it is today, beloved. His own received him not. They won't have him. They've turned their back on him, and they will until that day when he comes as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And it's no wonder to me at all that Shamer and the Jews over in Palestine today won't give their land up. Of course they won't. God promised them that land. God brought them into it. And God said, I'll make your nation as the sands of the sea and as the stars of heaven. And God's promise never fails. And God will never, never give up his earthly people, Israel. Well, that's been rather stammering, hasn't it? But that's how I see the Israelites. It's just a brief history of a brief resume of their history. There's an awful lot more, of course, concerning God's people. Books have been written, and words have been spoken about it, and you could speak about it, until he comes. But Israel is still God's people, and one day he's going to reign over them in justice and in equity.